Hey, Prime members, you can listen to The Vanished ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today.
So many people want to find Jesse, especially search and rescue people who recognize what he has done and who he is. There's a lot of people out there who care about our veterans, and the amount of people that have stepped up to try and help has been amazing.
Arizona has so many people here that go missing and then they're never found again because it's just such a massive place. There are mountains everywhere. And, you know, the reservation here is huge. I mean, it's just vast. There's just so many places. So what I did is I just started to, like, make a grid system, and I would just go down, like, different roads one by one, and then I started mapping it off. Every time that I went out, I got more organized. I got, like, a huge map, and I put it on my wall, and I was marking it down with different colors.
37-year-old Jesse Conger was last seen leaving his girlfriend's apartment in Scottsdale, Arizona, on August 14th, 2019. He drove off in his silver Toyota Camry and was never seen or heard from again. When Jesse's girlfriend returned home from work, she found a number of items missing that pointed to what possibly happened to Jesse, a U.S. Marine Corps veteran who had served multiple tours of duty in Iraq and Afghanistan. But more than 2 years later, what happened to Jesse Conger remains a mystery. I'm Marissa, and from Wondery, this is episode 305 of The Vanished, Jesse Conger's story. Everyone knows that finding the perfect t-shirt can be a challenge. I've always had problems whether it was with the fit or quality. Luckily, the perfect t-shirt does exist, and you can find it at Skims. From cropped silhouettes to long-sleeve layering tees, there's a style for everyone. You know that I've been wearing Skims for a long time, and recently tried one of their t-shirts. It's the best-fitting tee I've ever worn. Skims makes the best basics and foundations. I got the boyfriend t-shirt in Onyx, and it's so soft and comfortable. I want to wear it every day. It literally fits like a dream. Shop the Skims t-shirt shop at skims.com, now available in sizes extra extra small to 4X. If you haven't yet, be sure to let them know I sent you. After you place your order, select podcast in the survey and select my show in the drop-down menu that follows. Jesse Conger was a strong, vibrant person who dedicated much of his career to rescuing others. Jesse has a twin sister, Patricia, who initially reached out to us to cover Jesse's story. She told us about life growing up with her brother.
So I'm 20 minutes older, and my dad says that Jesse has been trying to beat me at everything ever since I won that race. And we're twins, so naturally we get a lot of attention from that. We did everything together as kids. We didn't always get along. We're kind of opposite. He's very outgoing and outspoken and said what he wanted and did whatever, and I was always really quiet and shy. We used to do, you know, kickball or baseball or whatever we would play, football. If we were on the same team, the name of our team would always be the Twinner Winners. My mom had us in separate classes, except for 1 year we were in first grade together and we had the same class. Other than that, she always kept us separate because she was worried that we would not socialize with the other kids, but it didn't turn out that way at all. We always had different friends and related to different kids differently. Jesse has always been really goofy and funny. He is kind of the life of the party for the most part. He has a funny way of looking at things and he works really hard. He loves his kids. And he really loves his work. When he was a Marine, he volunteered for search and rescue, to become a search and rescue swimmer. The other members of his crew talk about how he breathed new life into the program. He brought new enthusiasm that they hadn't felt for a long time. It's really hard for Marines to get through that search and rescue swim school, and he got through it. And then after the swim school, you have more months, many, many more months of training on the job, as it were. And he got done in 4 months. It was unprecedented that he got done so quickly, but he wanted to get done. He wanted to get through it. He also completed emergency medical technician training on the side. So he became an EMT on the side just to increase the overall medical capabilities of the team. And he could do emergency procedures. If he couldn't get the victim up to the helicopter, he could still do them on the ground before they got him up to the helicopter.
Patricia told us what made Jesse decide that he wanted to join search and rescue.
When he was in the Marine Corps, he was put into a job in the, I think, the control tower. And he had to log the flights, the takeoffs and the landings and everything like that. And that was not something he enjoyed, which is why he volunteered for search and rescue. I believe they got some kind of flight pay for being in the air a certain amount of times a month. It wasn't pay increase or anything like that. It was because he doesn't like having a desk job. So being hands-on is what he needed to do. That school that he went to, they've told me, his teammates have told me, that when you are a Marine and you get through boot camp, the Marine Corps boot camp is the hardest boot camp out of any of the military branches. And they're screaming at you and treating you like dirt and stressing you out, and that's their whole job. And you've been a Marine for a couple of years, and then you go into that swim school. And the swim school is twice as bad, and they basically spend the whole school trying to drown you. They throw you into the water wrapped up in a parachute, and you just have to figure out how to get out. They tell you to carry a heavy rock across the bottom of the water, and then they jump on top of you and try to drown you that way. And they've told me that's basically what they do, is they put you in any high stressful situation that you could possibly be in the water, and then they make you perform while in that situation. Jesse, I was told, couldn't even swim that well when he first started that school, but he trained himself and he put in the extra hours on his own to do it.
In a letter of recommendation that Jesse's family shared with us, it was noted that Jesse flew on 40 separate search and rescue missions, completed 5 technical rescues, and was directly involved in saving 25 lives. Jesse was a decorated veteran who had spent years rescuing others. No one ever expected that search and rescue crews would one day be searching for Jesse. Like many veterans will tell you, their time in the service changed them. He returned home and the life he knew changed, and he struggled to find solid footing in a job or relationship. Patricia told us more about Jesse's post-military life.
He was honorably discharged. His wife and him got a divorce, and his wife moved back to Utah, and she married an airman who started moving all over. And he decided he did not want to live away from his children anymore. So he got discharged and he started following them around the country. They moved to Illinois, so he moved to St. Louis, and he'd live an hour or so away from his kids at any point so that he could be involved. They have an extremely cooperative co-parenting capabilities. His kids are teenagers. Really, really smart. Both are athletic. They just really love him. He loves them. After he was discharged, he started working for a friend doing sales out of Wyoming. He stopped working for his friend, and then he went with another friend and started tearing down barns. And so these barns that people have on their property that they don't want anymore, him and his friend will go and tear him down, but they tear him down in such a way that you can turn around and resell the wood. And so they would tear down the barns for free to the property owners, but then they would save all the wood and sell it to people who wanted the old wood for different projects. And they liked being outdoors. They liked going out to kind of back country areas and spending several days working on that. They slept outside a lot, kind of living in the old West.
There were many things that Jesse experienced during his time working in combat roles overseas that left a mark on Jesse. Many of these events he did not talk about with anyone. But things seemed to be improving. Jesse had been diagnosed with post-traumatic stress disorder. He had a service dog and was undergoing treatment and attending group therapy. However, despite those improvements, in the days leading up to his disappearance, Patricia believes that things were getting worse for Jesse.
I think that Jesse was not himself. His girlfriend said that they had gone to Mexico 10 days earlier and gotten Xanax. Xanax is not good for Jesse. Xanax is not good for people with PTSD. He was feeling a lot of stress, but it's not good for people with PTSD. And his doctor told me that it's extremely dangerous for Jesse. And I think that he must have been in a lot of pain. He had been saying, I think that it would just be easier if I was just gone, if I was just dead, different things like that. And there's been other times where he's talked about needing to make things safe, how he needs to protect his family. 2 days before he left was my dad's birthday, and I was texting with him, and he was talking about how he needed to make sure that things were safe, that he needed to take care of things, and that he would explain everything. He was extremely paranoid about things being unsafe. He had done therapy for the PTSD. They had done DBT, which is dialectical behavior therapy, I think, and medicines, different medicines. I don't know what medicines, but yeah, he had done quite a bit of work. The thing with Jesse is he always seems okay. Jesse always has a good front on. He always puts up a good front, jokes, laughs, has fun. People don't realize how stressed he is underneath or inside. People don't realize what he's done. He doesn't like to brag about any of the awards he had been given for his work in search and rescue. I was told by this woman that's deployed with him both times that he was in Afghanistan, that she was in his unit the whole time. She said that he had 8 Marines under him, and he worked really, really hard to get 2 of them meritoriously promoted. Then he instituted some kind of a game night or a fun night once a week to keep spirits and morale up while deployed. And then she said that he never let any of the women, who especially had opposite shifts of him, walk back to their tents alone. If he wasn't there to do it, he had his Marines walk them back and forth, go pick them up from their tents and bring them to work, and then take them back home to their tents so that they could be safe in Afghanistan. I don't know if it was 100% necessary, but I do think that he just wanted them to feel safe.
Jesse hadn't been very open about his struggles with PTSD, but Patricia said she started to learn more about his issues when he moved back to Utah in March.
This is when we, his family, started finding out about the mental health issues and the different things that were going on with all the PTSD. And he was really, really embarrassed about it, but he wasn't on his medicines the way he should have been. He wasn't doing his therapy. That is why he came up here, so that he could get better, so that he could be a better dad to his children. But then he wasn't able to really get into it. Really, he was still traveling a lot. They were doing the barn busting, and he would go back and forth and visit Natasha in Scottsdale.
Jesse disappeared on August 14th, 2019. He left his girlfriend Natasha's apartment in his Toyota sedan, never to be seen again. His sister Patricia lives in Utah, and Jesse was in Arizona when he went missing. His family was not immediately aware that anything was wrong. Patricia told us how she found out that her brother was missing.
Jesse's ex-girlfriend, who lives here in Orem, called me, and I called my dad. My dad said, I was going to wait until you got home from work. And he said, but yes, Carly, who is Jesse's ex-wife, called him at the same time. So Jesse had gone missing on Wednesday, the 14th. His girlfriend filed missing persons the next day, the 15th. She called Carly, Jesse's ex-wife, and she called Carly and wanted Carly to tell us. And Carly, I guess, assumed that she was going to call us and tell us herself. But we did not know until the Monday following his disappearance.
We all know there are things in life that you have to compromise on, but when it comes to your health, there's no compromise. So don't settle for that one doctor that isn't really addressing your needs. Instead, check out ZocDoc, the place where you can find and book doctors who will make you feel comfortable, and you can even search by location, availability, and insurance. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. Once you find the doc you want, you can book them immediately. You can filter specifically for ones who take your insurance, are located near you, and treat basically any condition you're searching for. The typical wait time to see a doctor booked on ZocDoc is between just 24 and 72 hours. That's it. I use this and you should too. Go to ZocDoc.com/vanished and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/vanished. ZocDoc.com/vanished. Imagine upgrading your wardrobe with luxury essentials at unbeatable prices. Quince is here to transform the way you shop with a range of high-quality items priced within reach, like 100% Mongolian cashmere sweaters for $50, organic cotton sweaters, washable silk tops, and timeless 14-karat gold jewelry. The best part, all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to us. And I was thrilled to learn that Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes. I love that. I now have several items from Quince. I love their cardigans, pants, and shirts. I find their pieces to be easy to mix and match, and also to dress up or dress down. Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/vanished for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/vanished to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/vanished. Jesse didn't have a phone with him when he left his girlfriend's apartment on August 14th, making it more difficult to try to track him down. Patricia told us more about what Jesse had with him on the day of his disappearance and what items he left behind.
He took his car that he probably had his gun with him because it wasn't in his girlfriend's apartment, and that he had left his wallet, his ID, and his dog. His service dog. And as far as anyone knew, he didn't have any money. He left his phone and his iPad at the apartment as well. So he left pretty much everything except his gun, and he drove off in his car.
Scottsdale, Arizona is surrounded by vast expanses of desert that can be difficult to search. Patricia told us about some aerial searches that were done to look for Jesse.
So we had some planes going out. There was these two men, Bill Pulte and Mark Love, paid for a big aerial search. They went out the first day. They had three planes and a helicopter, and they went home to Aspen, Colorado, where they flew out of that night, and they had five or six different places that they wanted to check out. And one of those pilots, he flew back down to Scottsdale. He landed, and he got a car and he drove to all of those places himself to check him out that very night.
Earlier, Patricia mentioned that before Jesse disappeared, he had gotten the prescription drug Xanax from Mexico, and that wasn't something that Jesse should have been taking. Patricia explained her concerns about this.
Someone asked me, how do we know that they were Xanax? How many pills were in the bottle? She said she didn't know what color they were. How big was the bottle? Was it like a 90-day supply or a 30-day supply? She didn't know. She just said that he took the whole thing with him. And that's why someone was saying, well, that's depending on how big they were, how many they were, would determine if that would be, you know, the way he would want to kill himself, is if he wanted to swallow that whole bottle of pills. And if it was just a small bottle, then it might not be enough.
We wanted to talk to Jesse's girlfriend, Natasha, because they were living together at the time that he disappeared, and she was the last known person to see Jesse alive. We connected with her to see if we could learn more about what was going on in Jesse's life prior to his disappearance. This is what Natasha told us about her relationship with Jesse.
We've met each other like 5 years. We dated for, maybe like close to like a year and a half, I guess. And that's when I went to Christmas and all that. Both of our parents live in Utah. So we went and visited our families for Christmas, and then we broke up, and then I moved to Myrtle Beach. I went to Myrtle Beach to go to college out there. So while I was there, I was deployed to Germany, and through this whole time, like, Jesse and I had always continued to, like, see each other when we could, and we've kept in touch, and, you know, we've just been, like, really good friends, and I've just kind of been on my own path. And then in the meantime, he dated somebody else as well. I guess like in April, he decided to like break up with his girlfriend that he was dating and decided to move here. So that's kind of how things have been going. So it's one of those things. And, you know, I've been trying to focus on finding my career path and doing things for me. And he's been doing his own things. But we've always just, you know, been there for each other, just hasn't really been working out. But since I've been here, you know, the timing was right. So he decided to come make things work again. So when he came here, he wanted to go to this private security contracting school. So he was actually like signed up for it to go, but he didn't end up going, obviously. So when he would come here, just my apartment, I actually just moved to a new place before we had reconnected. So when I moved here, I was like, okay, well, this place isn't going to be big enough for the both of us, so we'll just try to get a house together. So I kind of quit unpacking all my stuff, and we were looking at houses and stuff to get together, and then they went missing. So even here, ever since I moved to this place, he's been here with me. All of the places that we go, everybody knows us together. You know, we always go down to the little karaoke bar down the street, and everybody that, you know, knows us. And just hard because I haven't really had any memories here without him.
Jesse's challenges with post-traumatic stress from combat affected not just Jesse, but also everyone around him. Natasha told us more about Jesse's struggles with PTSD from her perspective.
Jesse has been suicidal since I met him. I would go with him to the VA sometimes. I would just sit out in the truck and I would just wait, you know, and he would be in there for like hours talking to a therapist or whatever it would be. And a lot of times he wouldn't really talk about it, but he would just not want to be alone. He would ask me, and I would stay with him like for days at a time, like, come on, can we at least go to my house so I can get a different change of clothes, you know, and he would come with me. You know, he didn't really talk about it, but I knew a lot of times when he was struggling because he just wouldn't want to be without me. He needed somebody there. I think he was doing one-on-one counseling. And then actually recently when he started to come down here again in April, he was involved in a drug trial at the VA. So they were wanting to give him, like, it might have been a placebo, and it might have, you know, one of those things where you don't really know, like, kind of what you're getting. They're just trying to see, like, what works and what doesn't. So he was in that program. He was, you know, coming down here a lot. I don't think he was really in the drug trial long enough for it to help him. He actually was in a treatment center for like 4 months through the VA, and it did seem to help him, I thought. he came to see me right as soon as he got out. So I ended up graduating, and he came to see me for my graduation. And he had just gotten out of the program, you know, just one of those things. I was really lonely when I was deployed, and he was, you know, lonely while he was in the treatment center. And we just kind of, like I said, we've just always been there for each other. You know, we might not have always been together, but we're always there for each other. So he came here, and it was right after he got out of his treatment. They put him on drugs, finally. He was different. He was like him, but like a muted version of him. And he was like, yeah. He's like, I don't really think that it helped, but he did like that they have like a lot of good programs where you can meet other people. He said that the one-on-one counseling didn't necessarily help him, but I think he enjoyed like the group settings where you can meet like other vets that have the same issues. I think he kind of felt more comfort in a group setting with other people who know what he's going through rather than like the one-on-one setting. It's not like it goes away. It's just some days are more than others. Sometimes with Jesse, I was able to go and we just went to the VA that day and he was able to get seen. But then sometimes they, you know, can't see you and then you have to make appointments. Well, the problem is when you're suicidal, sometimes if you have like a trigger that day is the day. You can't wait for 3 weeks to get seen when you're triggered that day.
Though it seemed that Jesse had been improving in treatment for some time, he continued to struggle with negative and disruptive thoughts as well as flashbacks. He was struggling deeply on the day that he disappeared. Natasha told us more about the morning that Jesse went missing.
Well, so the day of the disappearance, Jesse had been like kind of depressed and like laying in bed for like 2 days before that happened. And so the day that he left in the morning, I woke up and I talked to him, you know, and I said, listen, are you going to get up and do some things in the house today? He had just been moving here. He wanted to go and get a storage unit here. So he was going to go check out a storage unit. And then his ex-girlfriend had locked him out of like his bank accounts and stuff. So I told him, I was like, try to go find, because he uses USAA, but she had like reset all of his passwords and stuff like that to where he couldn't get in. So when you know, when you call and like, you know, they're like, oh, what's your password or whatever, then they, you know, the password was changed, so he couldn't get in. So I was like, try to go find like a physical location of the bank and see what you could do. So I just had some things for him to do. I was like, can you get out of bed? Because like I said, he had been at home and laying in bed and not really functioning. So I was like, can you get up and go do some things? And he was like, yeah. I had to go to work that day. So when I left, he wasn't really talking to me. Jesse doesn't really have a phone. So he doesn't have a cell phone. His ex-girlfriend took his cell phone and he just kind of liked it. He just kind of liked not having a phone anymore. He got us like a house phone so we could use like from the house. So he would just email me from his iPad or whatever. He told me that his ex-girlfriend would take away his phone periodically, I guess, to ensure that Jesse wouldn't cheat on her. She was very controlling. Jesse's always been not like a minimalist, but kind of. He's just not a needy guy. He doesn't need a lot of like high-tech stuff. He doesn't really care about social media. He's not on there very much. So the day that he went missing, I tried to email him and stuff to let him know about, we didn't have the house phone hooked up. The people who were supposed to be hooking it up were supposed to be coming the next day. So I was emailing him, like trying to like to let him know about that. And I can just tell he wasn't really emailing me. Normally he'll email me like stupid stuff because he'll be here bored, you know, sitting here during the day. So he'll email me like funny clips or, you know, what are you doing or what do you want to do tonight or do you want me to go get dinner or something? And I just didn't really hear from him. So I thought to myself, like, okay, he's still depressed. He's laying in bed. I'll just let him ride it out, I guess. And when I came home, he wasn't here. So I looked, and usually when Jesse leaves, he'll leave me a note. So he's never not left me a note. You know, he'll say, oh, I went to the casinos. I'm going to be there till 6 o'clock. So you could either come there or if you want to wait, I'll come home at 6 o'clock. He never just leaves and doesn't tell me. On that day, there was no note. The door was locked when I came home. So that's what made me think maybe he just went to go run some errands and then come back. And so I looked around for him. I went to the bar that we always go to because I'm like, okay, well, did he go down to the bar, maybe just forget to leave me a note? So I went there. We have, like I said, the little karaoke bar. We just go there all the time. That's like our spot.
So I went there, he wasn't there. And then I was like, okay, well, maybe he went to go to the VFW because he'd been wanting to go and check out the VFW location here. So I was like, okay, maybe he went there. And so I went there and he wasn't there. And then came home and I thought to myself, like, okay, well, he's not there. I got home at 5, you know, so it took me like 15 minutes to kind of like run around to these two places and just see if he was there and he wasn't. So I was like, okay, well, maybe he just went to the bank. Maybe he's just leaving and maybe he'll just be home. It felt like so much time had went by, but really when I got back, it was like 5:15. I'll just wait here and I'll just hang out for a little bit and I'll just see if he shows up. So I went to the gym. They had my apartment complex has a gym. So I just went there and worked out for a little bit. And then, you know, it was about like 6:30 or whatever. I came back here and he wasn't here. So I was like, okay, well, let me go look again. Maybe he was like in the bathroom. Maybe I didn't see where his car was parked. You know what I mean? So let me just go check again. I asked, you know, the bartenders, hey, has Jesse been in here? No, I haven't seen him. You know, I'm new to this area. And the only places that him and I would go, like we go together. That's the only places that we go. So I was like, you know, unless he's running errands, I really don't have any idea where he would be. I started to feel it that night, but I was like, you know, I've already looked. I've looked at the places that I thought he would be. And I looked around in the apartment and I saw that his gun was gone because he just kept it right on the bedstand. It was just sitting right on top there. So I was starting to think like that night, like, okay, well, I mean, I guess wherever he is, and maybe he went to the casino or something. And then, I can't go look at him at the casino. They're massive. So I guess he'll just either show up or, you know, he won't. So I'll just stay here and I'll wait. I woke up in the morning and he wasn't here.
The morning after Jesse's disappearance, Natasha was concerned, but she also had to go into work that morning. She was able to get in touch with a friend of hers to help call around and see if they could find Jesse.
I went to work, and then when I was at work, I contacted my best friend. She lives in Indiana, and I was like, Jesse didn't come home. The gun's missing. I'm at work right now, but I'm going to start like calling hospitals. And so she helped me because she was at home off work that day. So we called like all the hospitals around here. We called the different police departments, try to figure out like if anybody had him. Nobody did. And so I told myself, like, okay, well, what if, you know, he got drunk or something and left it off in his car and then didn't wake up in time to come home? So, like, maybe he'll be at home when I get home. But then I was waiting for an email, you know, like, hi, you know, I'm here. Something happened, but I never got one. So I told myself, like, okay, well, if I get home and he's not home, then I'm going to file the missing persons report. Because I called all the hospitals and the police stations and like nobody had heard of them. So then I got home and he wasn't here still. So that's when I called the detective. So I filed the person's report with him and it kind of took a day or two for them to come here, speak with me like at the apartment and look, you know, check things out.
Natasha was concerned that Jesse may have gone out into the desert to harm himself. So she began trying to search for him there.
Friday, I started going out to the desert looking for him the day after I filed. So Wednesday, he didn't come home. Thursday, I filed the missing persons report. Friday, I started looking. That was before anybody was knew about it or anything. I just told myself, I'm like, you know what? I'm going to go look for him. I can't even believe I felt like an insane person. I have a drone and I have a Jeep. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to go look for him. So when I was at work all that day, I started to like map out like where would I go if I was Jesse? What are the places that are close and available that he could go to? Jesse didn't have a phone, so he couldn't really like look at stuff, but he did have like a huge map of Arizona in his car.
Natasha explained how they were able to narrow down the time frame in which they believed that Jesse left the apartment.
Patricia was the one that found his car leaving on the day that we think like that would have had to have been in that window that he left, because I got home at like 5 or 5:15 or something like that. And he sent an email at like 3:10 and he sent it here from his iPad. So he had to have left in that window. By the time he left, he sent that email and then I came home. So she went through and she found this, you know, surveillance footage from a corner store over here. of a car that looks, you know, looks like, you can't confirm it, but, you know, it looks just like Jesse's, and it was in the time frame. But other than that, like, there's been no sightings of him at all.
You aren't sleeping, and you're stressed out. That's how it was for me, so I cleared out my cabinet and reset my health with CBD from CB Distillery. Their deep sleep gummies are amazing. CB Distillery's targeted formulations are made from the highest quality clean ingredients. No fluff, no fillers, just pure, effective CBD solutions designed to help support your health. In two non-clinical surveys, 81% of customers experienced more calm, 80% said CBD helped with pain after physical activity, and an impressive 90% said they slept better with CBD. If you struggle with a health concern and haven't found relief, make the change to CB Distillery. And with over 2 million customers and a solid 100% money-back guarantee, CB Distillery is a source to trust. I have a 20% discount to get you started. Visit cbdistillery.com and use code VANISHED for 20% off. That's cbdistillery.com, code VANISHED. cbdistillery.com. Audible offers thousands of popular favorites, exclusive new series, guided wellness programs, comedy, and exciting new voices in audio. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. The Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere, while traveling, working out, walking, doing chores, you decide. I like to listen a little bit each evening while I'm cooking dinner. And it's great for my evening walks, too. Recently, I've been listening to Lay Them to Rest by Laura Norton. It's a fantastic audiobook. You don't want to miss it. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. That's audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. So there's another aspect of this case that we have to discuss. You heard Natasha briefly mention Jesse's ex-girlfriend, who Natasha believes to have been controlling, based on the things that she witnessed after Jesse had moved in with her. Before Jesse had moved to Scottsdale with Natasha, Jesse had been in a relationship with another woman in Utah. We have chosen not to name her. This relationship was volatile. We do not justify Jesse's alleged actions in this relationship, but had to wonder if they were related to his disappearance. You see, a month after Jesse disappeared, a warrant was issued for his arrest in Utah, after his ex-girlfriend alleged to police that Jesse had assaulted her, sent threatening text messages, and was verbally abusive. The ex-girlfriend noted in her statements to police that Jesse is a veteran who struggles with PTSD. Could this have been a reason for Jesse to run? We asked Jesse's sister Patricia to tell us what she knows about this relationship and the media reports that talk about the arrest warrant being issued.
Jesse has his issues. Someone wrote to me just yesterday, saying, how come Jesse doesn't get to have a say in this? How come you're not fighting back against the media? You should call the media and let them know that you're going to sue for slander. Because it clearly says that she assaulted him in the report. He didn't assault her. It clearly says she assaulted him. But Jesse's not violent, but he has a temper, and she makes up a lot of stuff. She and my dad still communicate. I have since cut off communication with her, but she really had my dad going because she started telling my dad that he had run away multiple times. He would go on these camping trips anywhere from between 2 to 5 days, multiple times throughout their relationship, and that he was just camping. He was just fine. And my dad was like, wait, what? So he is just hiding, or he's just run away? Because we didn't know about the charges against him. So he's just like, he just ran away. And he said to her, did you file missing persons every time? And she said, yes, every single time except one, because he had his phone. And she also said, and he never brought his dog. He never brings his dog camping. He always leaves her at the apartment. And so my dad was like, oh my gosh, this is new information. And so he called Detective Bailey, and Detective Bailey had to call all the places that they had lived, which had been three places. 3 different states, and he called all the places and looked for a missing persons report, and none of them had missing persons reports. So it's hard to know. I know that some of the things she says are true, but she just seems to embellish quite a bit. So I do know that Jesse has a temper, and I do know that he can say some really hurtful things, but I don't know. I can't say for sure that he's not violent. I can say that he's never hurt me. He's never put a finger on me. And I don't think he's ever put a finger on his ex-wife, on Carly. And I'm sure that Natasha, he's definitely kind of a go with the flow. He doesn't like to fight. He doesn't like confrontation and contention.
In any relationship, there are two sides to every story. And as a victim-focused podcast, we don't want to discount the abuse that Jesse's ex-girlfriend claims she endured. And perhaps Patricia was simply defending her brother, as most of us would be inclined to do. But she told us about some other aspects of this relationship that seemed to blur the lines of fault.
She had been doing really horrible things to him. She had broken into his hacked into his email, hacked into his bank account, locked him out of everything. He didn't have funds for a while. He doesn't have access to the email that he's had since his kids were small, since he was married to his wife. And she broke into that. She broke into his Instagram. She has his Facebook. So they had subpoenaed iTunes and Google to get proof of all of that. And that came in just before he went missing. So he does have proof. Whatever charges she was going to bring against him for the hiding the computer on the shelf, he had a lot worse charges to negotiate with to get those dropped. For some reason, ever since they got to Utah, because they had lived in Wyoming and Illinois and Las Vegas before, but they got to Utah, and then in that month and a half, the police got called 5 or 6 times. And that last time she called, he refused to speak to the police. He exercised his rights. And so she was out there with like a SWAT team, and he just wouldn't come out of the house, and they couldn't go in and get him because he hadn't done anything wrong. That's how all the other police reports ended up, was they would just say, okay, why don't you sleep in separate bedrooms today? No arrests were ever made. So anyways, he hid her laptop, and he said to her, and I guess he said to the police the next day or later on, but he said, I hid her laptop because she called the police for no reason. And he didn't know that that was a crime.
Patricia told us that prior to Jesse's disappearance, he had been attending court hearings to fight the charges against him.
Now I'm going through his emails between him and his lawyer and looking at everything, and I'm seeing, oh, so he did have the evidence. Oh, he did have this. He did have that. You know, he had proof of his innocence. He was excited and well prepared for that hearing. He thought it was all going to end at that hearing, that it was going to be dismissed. That was like the 3rd or 4th hearing. They had been going to court all summer, and then it just turned into all this other stuff. This hearing that he missed was already a hearing, was already supposed to be heard like a month and a half before he went missing, but she had missed it. She didn't show up. Her lawyer was there. He was there. His lawyer was there.
Patricia told us that it was a struggle to decide whether or not to discuss this relationship with us. She talked about it with Natasha and ultimately decided that it was important to address what she believes is Jesse's side of the story, since he can't share it with us himself.
And we talked about it before, and I said, do you think we should talk about on the interview? And she said, no, I think we should just focus on Jesse. And I said, I think we need to. She's like, no, I don't think we need to talk about it. I don't think we should. And we shouldn't give it credence. And I was just thinking, I think we need to talk about it. Because people do get upset when they're like, why am I getting all concerned for a criminal? Not very many people. Like, it's been a very small amount of people that have gotten upset that I wasn't fully disclosing everything. I didn't know everything until after the warrant was issued.
Jesse's case first came to us in 2019, and we had planned to air his episode in 2020. However, as we were producing his episode, there was a major development in his case that we will discuss later. At that time, we decided to hold off on airing Jesse's story to see what happened, hoping that he would be found. Back in 2019, we had requested records from the Scottsdale Police Department, and they had only released a single page to us. as we were preparing to air Jesse's story in 2021, we decided to test our luck and file a new request. This time, they released just over 200 pages. Within the file, we found some interesting things that could help us to possibly better understand Jesse's mental state at the time he disappeared. He seemed to be very focused on the upcoming legal proceedings regarding the domestic dispute with his ex. There had been times where he mentioned to others that he believed he was being followed and tracked everywhere he went. They found that he had Google searched the following phrase, "What to do if you are being followed." Jesse had also said that his ex and her family had ties to the Italian mafia, and the family could make him disappear. He claimed that threats had been made against himself and his children. And just days before Jesse went missing, he said that if anything ever happened to him, to please contact his lawyer. We have no proof that anyone was following or tracking Jesse, or that anyone had threatened him. However, what is important here is that it seems that to Jesse, there was a real fear. Natasha told us what she knows about this.
Jesse was really paranoid. I don't know if this is true or not. So his ex-girlfriend had like mob ties. But regardless if it's true, Jesse thought it was true and he was definitely afraid.
We don't know what happened between Jesse and his ex-girlfriend, but given the circumstances of his disappearance, it's unlikely that the two are related, beyond the fact that this likely increased Jesse's stress right before he went missing. And while we never condone intimate partner violence in any form, we simply don't know what happened, or if this contributed to Jesse's decision to leave Natasha's apartment that day. Following Jesse's disappearance, his girlfriend Natasha took it upon herself to search the desert for any sign of Jesse or his Toyota Camry.
Arizona has so many people here that go missing and then they're never found again because it's just such a massive place. It's just crazy how many places you could be. I mean, you know, so people live in Scottsdale, you know, it's a decent sized city, but there are mountains everywhere. And, you know, the reservation here is huge. I mean, it's just vast. There's just so many places. So what I did is I just started to like and make a grid system and I would just go down like different roads. So there's like a major highway that goes through the reservation and that's like the biggest desert area out here. So I would just go down the roads like one by one and then I started mapping it off. And then eventually his dad and his friend came down here. Every time that I went out, I got more organized and I had bigger ideas and I was like, this didn't work or this would work better. By the time they got here, I was pretty efficient. I got like a huge map and I put it on my wall and I was marking it down with different colors, which ones I had went down. And so the thing is, when you're looking for different roads, you got to look for a road that a camera could get down. So I would just go and I would be like, okay, if I could drive down it far enough, could a camera get here? Nope. Okay. Turn around, mark that one off. Been there. So I would just kind of like grasshopper myself up along the beeline. And then when his dad came here, we would just kind of do that. And then we got like a map system that we have for an app. So that way we could follow each other and we could see the trails that each of us are on for one. So that way we could see where we've been. So we don't go to the same places. And then for two, in case one of us got stuck out there, you don't need to be looking for two people missing.
As the months wore on with no sign of Jesse, his friends and family planned a large search for that October.
But we had a big search on October 5th, and we had over 100 volunteers come out, and they just spread out and just searched the whole area because we're working off this idea that since Jesse's car hasn't been seen, that he's probably within a 30-mile radius of the city, of the apartment that he went missing from. So we had this humongous search, and everyone was there, the news were there, and everything like that.
We mentioned earlier that Jesse had a service dog named Oreo, who provided Jesse with a lot of positive and helpful therapy. We asked Natasha about the dog.
I remember they got her as a puppy because I've seen the pictures of her when she was a little tiny puppy with him and his kids. So I think he probably got her maybe like 3 years before I met him. She was a puppy, and I think they took her to like the classes. I think that she knows how to clear a room, like she, you know, goes around and just kind of like checks out the room and stuff. She can tell like when you're depressed and things like that.
Since Jesse went missing, his service dog has gone to live with his kids.
She went to go live with the kids, with Jesse's kids, with Carly. I had her here. I love Oreo. I always have. But the problem is she made me really sad because she's just looking for Jesse constantly. It just made me really sad. So I was having a tough time. You know, it's one of those things I want to keep her because that's Jesse's dog. And I love her and I would want to keep her long term. But just for the time, I was just feeling so like, oh. And I was out in the desert every day looking for him. So I couldn't bring her with me because she doesn't do too well in the heat. So, you know, it was just kind of hard for me to look for Jesse. And then when I was here, you know, she'd get so excited to see me, but then she would look around like, where else? Where's dad? You know what I mean? Like, you're here, but there's one more person coming, right?
Jesse's ex-wife, Carly, wanted to help look for Jesse, but also lived in another state and was raising the two children that she shared with Jesse. Patricia told us about the conversations she had with Carly.
Carly is his ex-wife, and she called me and she said, I feel like such a slug because I feel like everyone's doing things and I'm not doing anything. And I said, your job is to protect your kids because we don't know what's going to be coming along next. And she said, that makes me feel a lot better. And I said, where do you think he is? And she said, I think he's dead. This is extremely unusual for him. A lot of people might think that he's disappeared before or different things, but he does not leave his kids and he does not go so long without, the only time he's gone so long without talking to his kids is when he was deployed. He talks to his kids pretty much every day.
After Jesse disappeared, some people came forward with leads. About 10 days after he was last seen, someone claimed to have seen him at a McDonald's. The description they gave sounded a lot like Jesse, 6'3" with lots of tattoos, a mustache, and a beard. If you look at photos of Jesse, that sounds about right. Someone heard from someone else that Jesse was alive and just needed some time. He didn't plan to be gone forever. And Patricia told us that this lead about Jesse being alive came from his ex-girlfriend.
She had told me Jesse was alive and well. Someone contacted her to let her know that he was with them and that he was just hiding and that I needed to call off the search. She wants me to call off the search. But then she was saying it was someone that was in the hospital with Jesse when Jesse was in the hospital for 6 months. And she said it was some army guy. Well, I'm in contact with most of those guys. So I texted one and I said, who in that group was in the army? And he said, I sent him the screenshot. And he said, that sounds like me, but it's not me. There's one other army guy. His name is Jeff. And I was in contact with him. So I contacted him. He's like, that's not me. He said, if Jesse was with me, I would tell you for sure.
None of these tips that came in early on ever went anywhere. We had planned to end Jesse's story here, but as I previously mentioned, there was a major development in 2020, shortly before the COVID-19 pandemic upended the world. On January 23, 2020, the Scottsdale Police Department announced that they had located Jesse's car in San Carlos, Arizona. We are purposely choosing not to name the exact location where Jesse's car was found upon request. We caught up with Patricia again recently and asked her to tell us more about how his car was found.
So I was in yoga on a Thursday, and I came out of yoga and looked at my phone, and there was a text from someone, and he said, hi, my name is Levi. And then he said, I work for Eastern Arizona Railroad. And so that was what was so weird, is people will always call me or text me to scam me. And they always are like, I have your brother. Give me $10,000, you know, or something like that. But this guy, he gave me his full name. He gave me where he worked. And he said, I think we found your brother's car. He wasn't like, I found your brother's car. Give me 30 grand, you know, or anything like that. And I was like, oh my gosh, are you serious? And I tried to call him and there was no answer. Then I called Scottsdale Police Department, Detective Bailey. There was no answer there. And I texted while I was making these calls. I was texting Levi and I said, do you have a picture? And then they sent me a picture of the license plate. I was just going over it over and I was like 696G03. And then I went over each individual number, 696. And so then Detective Bailey got in contact with me. He said, they're in a really weird, way out of the way area. It's really hard to get to. The local police department hasn't even gotten there yet. I'm on the phone with them on the other line. And in the meantime, Levi was texting me back and I said, is there anything like you can tell me which way is it pointed and different things like that? And they sent me a location, like the longitude and latitude.
Authorities began to search the area around the vehicle, under the impression that Jesse would have had to leave his vehicle on foot in such a remote area. Inside Jesse's car, they found the keys and the ignition, a camouflage pouch, a service dog vest, and some water. There was no sign of a camp in the area. The vehicle was left unlocked with the windows rolled up. The car appeared to be operational and still had gas in the tank, and all of the tires were inflated. In order to get to that area, the car would have traveled about 5 to 6 miles down a rough dirt road, which appeared to cause some damage to the bumper. There were various items removed from Jesse's car, including his GPS and an Apple iPhone 6. The phone was severely damaged with glass missing. They were unable to get the device to turn on or charge. It appeared to be an old device that had been left in the car. The GPS unit proved to be useless as well. Meanwhile, Patricia was trying to keep up with what was going on and help as much as possible from her home in another state.
They were texting me and they said, okay, we're trying to help them come. And then they'd say, oh, they're here now. And then Detective Bailey would call me and say, okay, they're there now. It is Jesse's car. But I already knew it was Jesse's car because Levi had already sent me the picture. It was just very surreal. So then Detective Bailey said, okay, I know you like to get on social media and everything, but maybe refrain. And I was like, well, of course I'm going to refrain. We need to find if Jesse's body is in the area. I'm not going to like tell everyone until we have definitive answers. But he was actually kind of giving me a warning that I didn't realize at the time, which was, this is reservation. This is tribal land. These guys are super sensitive about what you say about them, and it'll mean the difference between if they work with you or not. And so after 2 days of searching, they called me early Saturday morning and they said, okay, we've searched, I can't remember if it was 4 square miles or 2 square miles. They said that they searched an area of 2 or 4, maybe even 6 square miles. And we haven't found anything. Come and get the car. And so then I made a post on Facebook and I talked about, okay, these guys found the car. And then they did a search and they haven't been able to find Jesse's remains within this search. And I said on Facebook, I said, but what kind of a search can they be doing that's like in this large area? How can they do a search with only 4 men, because they had told me they had 4 or 6 men. And I was like, how can they really do like a comprehensive search? And they didn't have dogs.
If you've ever been to a desert, you know how vast they are and how difficult they can be to search thoroughly. Patricia was pushing the detective to bring search dogs out to the area, hoping they could more quickly direct the search to Jesse.
There was this back and forth between Detective Bailey and I. He kept saying, okay, well, it looks like they're going to get dogs. And then later that afternoon, okay, it looks like they're not going to get dogs because it's about to rain. Okay, tomorrow they're going to get dogs. And they never got cadaver dogs. So I made a post Saturday morning. I said, Jesse's car was found. I'm looking for any help with cadaver dogs. I want to do a search. They already finished the search. They told me to come get the car. And so they're done, I guess, and they haven't found anything. So I got like a million phone calls, and it also went on the news, because as soon as they finished their search and then they reported it, then the news got a hold of it because it's on federal land. I wasn't even going to tell people what reservation it was on. So my friend and I drove down all night, got there the very next morning, Sunday morning, and we were wired. Like, we were up all night driving. And then when we got there, we just wanted to either see the car or get to the area. And the car was in impound. And so the railroad guys, as we call them, they said, okay, we'll take you out there. And so it was early, early Sunday morning. So they had to get ready and everything. And I said to my friend Tiffany, I was like, I don't want to wait around too long, you know? And so I was like, I know how to get there. They gave me the location. So let's just go down there. And so we went down there and we parked outside the gate. And so I went walking up the road, and then Levi texted me and he said, where are you? And I said, we're down on the road. I'm walking on the road. And he said, get out of there right now. He said, don't be out there alone. Wait for us. And I was like, oh, what? Okay. And so I went running back to the car, and he said, come to town, come to the Circle K right in town. And I did. And he was like, you cannot go on the reservation without a permit. And I was like, okay. So he's like, but come and get in the truck with us. You're not going to get down there in your car. So we went and got in the truck with them, and they were driving this big 4x4. And when we got on the road to get to Jesse's car, it was very rocky, and we would not have made it in Tiffany's car. It would have destroyed her car. And so it was just so surprising, thinking, oh my gosh, Jesse drove on this road with his car. So it was way, way, way off the main highway. It was really far away. There was twists and turns, and he had just driven the car straight into like a bunch of trees. And it was really well kind of hidden from any eyes. There was a lot of trees in the area that were really, really thorny. They were grabbing at us. When we left, our jeans were all scratched up. Our clothing was all completely scratched up. My arms were scratched up, and all our faces were scratched up. That's how it's so thick. It's such a thick amount of trees around there, and it was hard to get through. And so I can see why they gave up.
Patricia and some of Jesse's friends went through his car with a fine-tooth comb, hoping to find some sort of clue.
The next day, we went to get the car out of impound, and the car was completely trashed. They had gotten on the seat with their muddy boots. They had pulled everything out of everywhere. They had taken stuff from the trunk into the front passenger area. They had taken stuff from the front passenger area into the trunk. They had put things everywhere. They had not cataloged anything. I didn't realize they hadn't cataloged anything. They hadn't looked at anything. So Tiffany and I drove the car to a friend's house in near Phoenix, who is a marshal, a U.S. marshal. And he was Jesse's really good friend in the Marine Corps. They were search and rescue divers together. And so we took the car to his house, and he spent several hours going through the car with us. We just couldn't find anything that had any dates. There was every teeny little scrap of paper, any teeny little receipt, anything we would read. And the dates for everything was from before Jesse went missing. We couldn't find anything from August 14th forward. I looked through, he had books. I would look through and see if there was any writing in the margins, any papers anywhere, everything. Shoes, I would pull out a shoe or a boot or a jacket, and I'd look through all the pockets. I'd look through all the holes. We looked through absolutely every square inch of that car and everything inside of it. The next day, we went flying overhead. I thought that we might be able to see something, but the brush, those trees were just so thick, we couldn't see anything. And then we had to come back. We had to come home. I took Jesse's car home.
Patricia ran into obstacle after obstacle in trying to search the area for Jesse. The tribal land on which the car was located wasn't particularly cooperative, and authorities didn't want to interfere with another jurisdiction. In addition to the challenges presented by the location of where the car was found, Patricia says that the fights between the agencies in Arizona seemed to be more important to the investigators than working to look for her brother. Patricia continues to fight for searches of the area, and we asked her what she believes happened to Jesse now that the car has been located.
I mean, yeah, we were expecting to find his body and just have it be ended. And now here we are a year and a half later, and we still have nothing more than we did 18 months ago. He left Natasha's apartment with just his pistol and his bottle of tramadol and his bottle of Xanax. I believe he was going to commit suicide. I believe that he drove out into the middle of nowhere and he was going to walk for a ways away from the car. And then he was going to swallow the pills. And then if the pills weren't enough, which I have been told that the pills are enough, but if they weren't enough for some whatever reason, then he would have his pistol. And so the car had the keys in the ignition. As soon as they opened the door, the beeping from the keys being in the ignition started right away. He left everything there. He had survival gear. He had water. He had packs. He had fishing supplies. He had like a big Bowie knife. He had all kinds of stuff that he would need. He had cash. He had money in there. He had bullets. He had everything that he would need. I feel lucky thinking in my mind, my brother was already dead. He went out there, I believe, to kill himself. And so that's what there was no one that was going to save him from that.
So what happened to Jesse Conger after he left Natasha's apartment on August 14th, 2019? What was he thinking and feeling? We can't possibly begin to imagine what it was like for Jesse living with PTSD. We know that what Jesse dealt with is something that many of our combat veterans struggle with every day. Jesse was trying to turn his life from one of pain to one of positivity. And though we don't know conclusively what happened to him, it appears that Jesse most likely took his own life. According to the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs, 6,435 veterans took their own lives in 2018. The VA has resources and guidance for suicide prevention located on their website. We will include links in the show notes. If you or someone you love is experiencing thoughts of self-harm, we encourage you to call the National Suicide Prevention Line at 1-800-273-TALK. That's 1-800-273-8255. Jesse was loved by many. He has two children who are growing up not knowing what happened to their father. They, along with the rest of Jesse's loved ones, deserve to know what happened, bring him home, and honor his life. At the time of his disappearance, Jesse was 37 years old. He was approximately 6 foot 3 inches tall and weighed around 200 pounds. He had blue eyes, brown hair, and a variety of tattoos. If you have any information about the disappearance of Jesse Conger, you're urged to call the Scottsdale Police Department at 480-312-5000.
And I just want people in general to know, whether they're a veteran or not, if they're struggling with these deep, dark issues, that there's always people out there that you can ask help from. I just want everyone to know, but especially our veterans, to know that they're not alone. I mean, no one is all good or all bad. I mean, when your family's in crisis, when you find out that someone's in crisis, you're the family. You need to step up and you need to find them, because no one else is going to. And there's been so many people that have jumped up and offered to help and then fallen away after a few weeks when nothing is found. And that's fine, but I mean, they're not his family, so I wouldn't expect them to. But I am his family. I'm the one who needs to do it. And so we just need to find him.
That brings us to the end of episode 305. I'd like to thank everyone who spoke with us for this story. If you have a missing loved one that you'd like to have featured on the show, there's a case submission form at thevanishedpodcast.com. If you'd like to join in on the discussion, there's a page and discussion group on Facebook. I'm on Twitter @thevanishedpod and also on Instagram. If you enjoy this show, subscribe now and leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you're listening right now. Do you want to help support the show? There are a couple things that you can do. One way to help The Vanished is by supporting our sponsors. You can find links and promo codes in the episode notes. Another way to support the show is by contributing on Patreon, where you can get early and ad-free episodes. Be sure to tune in next week. We'll be revisiting a case that we previously covered from Texas. Thanks for listening.
This episode is brought to you by the effortlessly scrumptious bite of Skinny Pop Popcorn. Imagine this: perfectly popped, endlessly delicious kernels, a symphony of just 3 simple ingredients: popcorn, sunflower oil, and a sprinkle of salt. No compromise, just pure snacking freedom. And hey, if you're up for a twist, dive into flavors like zesty white cheddar to sweet and salty kettle. Every bite's a delight, light and oh so tasty. Shop Skinny Pop now.
Welcome to the small town of Chinook, where faith runs deep and secrets run deeper. In this new thriller, available exclusively on Wondery Plus, religion and crime collide when a gruesome murder rocks the isolated Montana community. Everyone is quick to point their fingers at a drug-addicted teenager, but local deputy Ruth Vogel isn't convinced. She suspects connections to a powerful religious group. Enter federal agent V.B. Loro, who has been investigating a local church for possible criminal activity. The pair form an unlikely partnership to catch the killer, unearthing secrets that leave Ruth torn between her duty to the law, her religious convictions, and her very own family. But something more sinister than murder is afoot, and someone is watching Ruth. With an all-star cast led by Emmy nominee Sanaa Lathan and Star Wars Kelly Marie Tran, Chinook is available exclusively and ad-free on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.